I'm an alcoholic. Thanks for waiting for me. You guys had more time to have the meeting before the meeting. I got in my car and I was like, I have been here a couple times before, but it's been a while, and I used to live in Richmond, and now I'm in Chester, a little south, so I got in the car, put in the address, and it was like 6:10, and I was like, oh no, I was like, I did not allow enough time, but I made it, and it was a gorgeous drive. I love the drive here, it's beautiful, and I had arranged some people, you know, a lady was coming with me, because that's usually what happens, and she had to back out, you know, at the last minute for something that had come up. And I thought, you know, when you guys were reading about how I established my relationship with my higher power and how that grows and this and that, it continues to grow for me. Like, I thought, wow, you know, I didn't used to like to be alone. You know, I used to hate to sit alone. I always had to have someone or something with me. And so today to be, you know, even my one of my friends were with me today, and they're like, you sure you don't want me to ride with you? Like, they were heading back to the beach today where they lived, and I was like, they're like, I'll ride with you so you don't have to ride alone. I was like, I'm not alone. I can enjoy the peace and being with myself and my higher power, which I, you know, I need to fully rely on, you know. So that it was a great opportunity to do that on the ride here. But anyhow, so my sobriety date is October 13th of 2013. That has changed once. I came in 2005, and I've been here since 2005, but in 2013, I guess I was resting on my laurels. I was too worried about what other people thought about me. You know, that was huge, what other people think about me. It still can be today, but that's gotten better. But anyhow, so yeah, I took a shot and had to drop all my sponsees, and you know, I would have told you at one time, man, this man, I guess he made my resentment list a little bit because he was so pushy. I don't think I've ever had anyone in all of my sobriety be so pushy. But that's how I used to be when I drank. If you weren't drinking with me or hanging with me and partying with me, I didn't even want to be with you. You know, I would be with you for a little while and then I'd go find those people who were partying like me. So, and I don't even know who they were at the end of the night or what happened or anything like that. So anyway, yeah, I had that shot and, you know, called my sponsor the next day because I had a lady coming over that I was sponsoring to read through the book, and I felt about this big when she got to my house reading with me, you know, the guilt over that. You know, my husband at the time would have said, you know, and he did say, he was like, man, Melissa, I would just chalk that up to a dessert. You know, it was like those one of the fruity little shots. It was a birthday shot or something. I was like, no, he's not one of us. So he just didn't get it, you know. But anyhow, so I grew up a little south, further south of Chester. I grew up in Hopewell. And I grew up with my dad, who drank every day. My mom, she didn't drink a drop. So they were like polar opposites. you know, I can remember growing up, my mom, she pretty much hated my dad, you know, and she worked a lot. He worked too, but, you know, she was always at work, and I hung with my dad a lot. I love both my parents, but my dad was fun, you know, he was a fun drunk. So he would come home from work and bring buddies over to the garage, and everybody would shoot pool with their 12-pack of beer, and then they'd have to go get more, and the 12-pack was for my dad, you know, and then he'd have to get more or whatever. And his friends would bring their kids, and I was little, so it was a bunch of little kids playing. My grandfather drank a lot, my uncles, I mean, we'd go out and, you know, my dad would take me drinking and driving out in the truck. We'd go spotting deer and, heron dipping at some little river thing, and we'd dip the net in. I mean, it was fun, you know. I ate whatever candy I wanted, you know, just hung out with all the other kids and didn't think twice about my dad drinking and driving. That was just normal to me. And then, you know, as I got older, you know, and took my first drink, I don't remember. Well, yeah, I mean, my first drink was probably from my dad. You know, I would go get his beer and stuff, and eventually I tasted that, and I thought, ooh, that tastes like pee. And I guess I just thought because it was yellow that pee, I thought it was horrible. but that was my first taste. And then, you know, later on, you know, getting in, I believe it was like high school days, you know, I liked the sweeter drinks like the Boone's Farm wine and stuff like that. And I started, I guess I was worried about, you know, what people thought about me then too, because, you know, I had to be a cheerleader, I had to play softball, and I enjoyed those things, but, you know, I wanted to be popular and wanted to hang with this crowd and have older boyfriends, and then eventually, you know, alcohol became, you know, it became like my friends who had their license before me would pick me up, and, you know, my mom was already used to my dad's drinking and him being irresponsible and him not showing up at home. And, you know, my mom and I would have to call. We had a list. We had a list on our refrigerator of all the numbers to the bars for my dad, because sometimes he wouldn't come home from work. So, you know, she needed him to come home and go to bed so he'd go to work the next day and make a paycheck. And so, you know, we would call these bars at like 11 o'clock at night. She would, or I would. I think I even started calling at some point, and we'd have to go pick them up. And I always thought it was cool that my grandparents used to live like out in the country like this. So, you know, I used to drive at a young age, like in their back little dirt roads. And so eventually then I think I was like 11 or 12 or I don't know how old, driving my dad's truck home from the bars many a night. You know, like my mom would drive her car. We'd go pick him up and he'd be sitting by another woman at the bar. And, you know, and we'd go in and get him. And, you know, I'd drive his truck home. And I always thought in my head, I was like, what if the police pulled us over, you know? But I would just say, would you rather me or my drunk dad be driving at this point, you know? But that never happened. And our house was close to those bars. So anyhow, you know, later as I got older and started drinking and having fun, I thought I was just doing what everybody else was doing, the people I was hanging out with. And it kind of was, you know, it was fun. And it was weekend things. And I had no idea that I couldn't control how much I drank, you know, until I got here and started going through the book and kind of looking at that stuff. I knew my life was unmanageable and out of control and bad things were happening, but I didn't know about the allergy till I got here. And I had heard about AA, you know, from my dad, because obviously he got, I don't know how many DUIs, you know, been to jail, but it just wasn't as serious as it is today. So, you know, he'd get slaps on the hand or pay a boatload of money to some lawyers and not really get in trouble. So, you know, in drinking for me, like I said, it was weekends and fun stuff in high school. And my grades were just pretty average, and it didn't affect any of that in school. And I always, like I said, chose the older guys, older people who could buy us alcohol. My dad bought us alcohol. The parties were at my house when my mom worked. So I can remember my mom would work till like 11:30 at night, and we had like a homecoming or something, and my dad showed up to walk me down the field, and he's like wasted and, you know, stumbling, and it was a little embarrassing. But, you know, after that, the party was at my house, and I think we had, like, keg stands and stuff off the roof, and, I mean, it was just insane. And then the police came, and my dad was, like, you know, the oldest one there, you know, and it's like, oh, my gosh. So, anyway, I felt like from an early age I had to be my dad's caretaker somewhat, even though I was partying too. And so when I got to be about 18, I think I was 18, my mom left. She was like, I'm done with you too, especially my dad. She didn't say me, but she's like, I've done my part. You know, you're grown now. You're following in your dad's footsteps, blah, blah. So she left us. And I was so selfish that the party was on at that point. Like, we had so many parties at the house, and I moved a friend in, a girlfriend that needed a place to stay. And, I mean, it was kind of bad for a while. And then my dad, he went pretty downhill from there. I mean, he always maybe smoked a little pot or something with his alcohol, but, I mean, I can remember my friends and I coming home, and he would be passed out naked in front of the fireplace that he had put the wood in, and, you know, in a mirror there where he had, like, snorted cocaine or something. It became embarrassing to me. And we would also go out together. Like, he would go with me, and that was cool when I was pretty young, because I would go to the bars with my dad or show up, and I'd get to drink. I mean, and I was like 16, you know, and I thought, wow, do they think I'm his girlfriend? I mean, like, how old do these people think I am? But it was nice for the local bars to serve me, too, without having any kind of ID. And I thought that was really cool. And then, so later, you know, my dad goes really downhill, and I guess my mom stayed gone for about a year and a half. And his story was he ended up just quitting drinking. He hasn't drank in about, I don't know, I think my mom started dating a deacon at the church. It was crazy stuff. But anyway, I don't know what made him stop drinking, but he hasn't had a drop in like 18, almost 20 years now. And he doesn't do AA. And, you know, he's questioned me before about AA, like, you know, do you really think you'll drink again? I mean, especially when I started having kids later, you know, in sobriety. He's like, do you really need to spend all that time? Because that wasn't his way of getting sober. And AA is not the only way to get sober, obviously. But, I mean, he's doing well. My mom ended up coming back and, you know, and they have a great relationship today. But anyhow, back to me. And he's a great grandfather and all that stuff. So it's been a miracle for him. But for me, I end up, you know, relationships I got into became just sick ones with men, you know, and abusive even. And the law getting involved, just sick relationships. And I thought I was a good girl, you know, and I would have said that to a lot of people and played the victim role and stuff like that, and I got this bad guy. I mean, I did choose him, this one particular one. It went on and off for about 4 years, but we met. I mean, I knew him because he was cool, and he was older, and he was in college, and I was like a senior in high school, and we met at a party, you know, lots of drinking, and I remember the cops coming. And I remember that we thought, shoot, you know, we weren't done partying yet, so what are we going to do? The cops are here to bust this party up. So he had this big redneck truck with huge tires, and I was like, I'm going with you. And he had a case of, like, Bud Light, and I was like, let's go, you know. So that started a four-year terrible relationship, you know. And it was good for a while, and I'd go off to Radford to college to visit while I was in high school and party up there, and just lots of partying. And he was cheating, and then I started cheating. I mean, it was just, you know, lots of lying, lots of cheating, just arousing jealousy, like all the stuff that, you know, I had to look at, you know, later on the fourth step and stuff like that. But anyway, so lots of that and lots of worrying my parents, especially my mom. I mean, I ended up moving to Florida with this guy. And I don't resent him today. I mean, he was on that list, but, you know, I played a huge part in that. And so I ended up moving to Florida with him just on a whim, not even telling anybody. And I'm an only child, too, so you can imagine my mom. And my dad was sober at this point, and, you know, and I just up and leave. And then, you know, my mom lost down to, like, 70 pounds. She doesn't weigh much, but she lost, like, 30 pounds, you know, sick. You know, just the selfish things I did. And, you know, because she didn't like that guy, because I had come home and played the victim role to her 20 times or more about what he had done to me bad, and then next thing you know, I'm right back together. So just sick relationships I had. I couldn't be a friend to anyone, a true friend. I didn't even know how, you know, a girlfriend. I didn't know how to do that either. Tell the truth. I mean, I don't know. I lied so much, like, to my parents and just to everyone. And then the drinking, there was always drinking involved, you know. I didn't get in too much trouble with the law, but I was the person who my cousins weren't allowed to spend the night with, you know, parents didn't, because of my dad, and then eventually because I was wild too, you know. And then eventually, like, you know, friends, parents and teachers and stuff, just, you know, I'm sure they were judging me and my character, because I just wasn't proud of any of those things growing up. And then I can remember my grandmother coming over, you know, and just, you know, calling me every name in the book because of, you know, what I had done to my mom and worrying her and, you know, just basically telling me true things about myself, you know, that I didn't want to look at. And I didn't want to be that person, but that's what I was. And the drinking, you know, I mean, the law for me got a little bit involved, but I never had to go to jail or anything. I should have, could have, you know, I drove drunk whenever I wanted to, you know. It wasn't even a question if we were going to parties, if we were doing whatever. You know, there was always drinking, and there was no way that we weren't driving home. I mean, we just drove home. And, you know, one time, I mean, I was the kid who was parked at the ball field, supposed to be watching ball games, had a cooler beer in my back of my car. I wasn't even of legal age yet, and, you know, and the cops pull up there. So I did get in a little trouble, but we were from a small town, so, you know, I think I got a slap on the hand. They called my mom. I had to do some community service hours and stuff like that, and so I had little run-ins with the law, and then later on, you know, I ended up, before I turned 21, getting fake IDs and stuff like that. So I did get in a little trouble for that, too, because, you know, all those sick relationships I had, you know, with men and boys or whatever, they would, you know, try to get me kicked out of the bar we were at because, you know, I was probably not behaving. Who knows? You know, I don't even know what I was doing. And, you know, there were lots of blackouts, which I thought everybody had. You know, I didn't know that, because I was hanging with people who partied like me, I guess. And I didn't know that people didn't know what they did. You know, I didn't know that you woke up the next day and you're like, oh, really? I said that? Oh, I did that. And, you know, where's my car? And, you know, stuff like that. I mean, that was college life, I thought, you know. So I don't know. So needless to say, my beginnings of college were not pretty. My parents quit paying, and they were like, we're done. So I get a job bartending and cocktailing, and that was wonderful and great scene until I got fired, you know, because you're not supposed to drink alcohol on the job. You're not supposed to be on the premises unless you're working. And I remember my dad and I actually went there one night to pick up this girl who lived with me temporarily, and she was working that night. So, you know, I wasn't supposed to be there, but we go to pick her up so we could all go out, and we go in, and, like, all my customers knew me, you know, as some sweet waitress. And then it was like night and day, because that's how it was. You put some drinks in me, and I'm not that sweet, quiet waitress anymore. I mean, like, I'm, like, dancing on the table, and, like, you know, there's a band, and we're having a great time, and that was my place of employment. The next day I show up, and I'm fired, because I was there when I wasn't supposed to be. I was intoxicated. I mean, it was just a mess. And I called my dad that day, and I was like, Dad, you got me fired. We weren't supposed to go up to my job. You know, it was just, whew. And so, anyhow, I did manage later to, after college is done at that point, and, you know, I got fired, and I'm like, what am I going to do now? I'm, like, out partying one night and run into this girl, and she's, I've known her for a long time, and she actually worked at my dentist's office, and she's like, I've worked for my brother forever, I'm sick of him, I'm quitting. You know, she was, like, his dental assistant, and she's like, and he was my dentist since I was three, and she's like, you should go there and get a job, because, you know, I'm sure I was crying and whining about losing a job, because it's woe is me, you know, it's all about me, especially if I'm drinking. I mean, you know, I don't even know what I say or do. And so, anyway, I go there whenever to, like, interview for the job, you know, because I needed a job. I wasn't in school anymore, and I got it, which was awesome, you know. So I started working for this dentist, and he actually employed me for 15 years. I mean, I got sober. I got sober while working there. So, I mean, I stayed at that job, and I'm surprised he didn't fire me, but I'd show up to work reeking of alcohol, having to work in people's mouths, leaving the chair and going to vomit, you know, because I got in at 4 a.m. or 5 a.m. and had to be at work. You know, so I had lots of that happening. Not a lot, but, you know, enough. I don't know how I kept that job. Had crazy, sick relationships again, that four-year on and off one. I remember he called my work and, like, left some horrible message, so we all get there the next day listening to the voice messages from supposedly patients about their appointments, and here's this boyfriend, ex, or whatever, leaving some crazy message about me, which was probably whatever he said was true, you know. I don't know, but anyway, how embarrassing is that? Anyway, there's people today, I mean, they employed me for 15 years. I was a great employee. I remember on my 21st birthday, I did always show up. I remember that on my 21st birthday, oh my gosh, it was a Tuesday night, and I was finally legal, and, you know, I had to be at work the next day. We worked Monday to Thursday. That was it. And so, you know, the next day was a Wednesday. I didn't even call in or anything. Like, I don't even know what happened. I know I woke up to the phone ringing at 10 a.m., you know, and it was my boss. And he was like, I'm just making sure you're okay. I know it was your 21st birthday. We just want to be sure you're all right. You know, and I'm like, yeah, I'm okay. You know, thank you so much. I was like, I'll be there. I'm going to shower. He's like, no, 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 don't come in today. You're fine. But, I mean, but that night, I mean, started out great. And, you know, it was like, what? I went to the liquor store right after work. So I was like, now I can legally use my own ID. I threw out the fake one and, you know, got my real one and went to the liquor store. I had never been there before and, like, loaded up on whatever all these ladies and I were going to drink. And, you know, we started out at someone's house, pre-party, because there was always a pre-party, like, every time before I went somewhere, because you had to get a little buzz before you could go, you know, I did. And so then we go wherever, whatever bar, just bar hopping. We tried to go to a male strip club, and there were just ladies, but you know what? There was alcohol there, so we went there. It didn't matter. There were no male strippers, so we went for the women. And then, you know, we left there. We end up back at some karaoke bar. We're all singing. And, I mean, it was a fun night, but I have no idea how I got home. I don't even know who was with me. And it wasn't even my own home. It was just my parents' house, you know, that I'm disrespecting and bringing people home to. And, yeah. So, anyway. So later on, moving along, you know, when I finally do move out and take a great man hostage, that was my husband, you know, we started dating, and I'm like, wow, you know, he's amazing, because every man I had before was not, you know, and he was great, you know, he was a great catch, someone introduced me, he was just had a great career, you know, and he talked me into going back to school, to dental school. I actually got in, so I became a hygienist, and, you know, we ended up getting married, and that went well until, you know, the drinking, obviously, you know, the staying out late at night, and the not coming home, and the lying, and all of that stuff, where then I get a dilemma of, you know, you got, something's got to go here, you know, either the alcohol or you. And so that's what really brought me here. You know, I had been to AA meetings with my dad a long time ago when he had to go court ordered, and we would leave the AA meeting, which he thought was a cult, and would go to the 7-Eleven and get his beer and go back home. So that was my first introduction to AA. As a, you know, a youngster. And then later on, coming into AA, the first time I came to a meeting on my own, I actually was referred from a, I went to counseling because all my relationships were failing. I was like, what's wrong with me? I felt like crap, you know, so I needed to go get some help. I tried church. Every time I went into church, I would cry, feel guilty, you know, thought the preacher was talking to me, I'm going to hell, all that stuff. So church didn't work. So I got to a counselor somehow. And after months of talking to her, you know, not about drinking, but just about my life and how it sucked and what's wrong with me and can you fix me and, you know, telling her about everything she asked. I don't know. I was pretty truthful with her. I mean, I didn't have to lie about anything. I wanted help. I wanted to be fixed. And I didn't realize alcohol was my problem because I compared myself to my dad and I was nowhere like that. So I wasn't sure if I was an alcoholic, although my mom and grandmother would have said, you're following right in your dad's footsteps, you know, and I heard that a million times. But I wasn't that bad, and I didn't know I couldn't control it. So I'm seeing this counselor, and she tried to give me some medication for anxiety and different things like that, and I'm kind of anti-meds. So I didn't do that. I ended up going to, like, some holistic place, getting these drops from my tongue and, like, thinking that would help and, like, some type of serenity drops or whatever. I mean, just whatever, you know. My tongue helped me out with stress relief and books and stuff like that, trying to do something that way. That didn't work. But, you know, then she eventually didn't have anything else for me. I wasn't going to take the meds. So she heard the alcohol thing somewhere. She gave me a when and where. And it was off Monument Avenue. She circled a meeting, and I don't know if she was in AA or just knew someone or what. But anyway, so that's the best thing that counselor did for me, because I went to that meeting. It was like a Saturday morning, and at the time my husband was working, so on Saturdays, and so it was great. I didn't have anything else to do, and I was feeling like crap still. So I go to this AA meeting, and it was huge, and I was really nervous, and I was by myself, and I just show up and sit in the back because there was an open seat, and listened and liked what I heard. Like, I mean, I don't remember hearing steps and, you know, the program, what we do here. I just remember hearing people share and me relating. And so I went to that meeting, I don't know how long, I guess for months, because I stayed sober a year on that, not doing any step work, not sponsored. I don't remember hearing that. I'm sure they were saying that, but that's not what I was listening out for at that point. I was just relating, and I didn't get to know anybody either. I didn't, like, talk to you people. I mean, I'd say hi to some people, whoever were sitting in the back, like, hey, how are you? Just small talk and be out the door. Felt good, you know, married now, not drinking. But like I said, while married, I got back into college at the dental school in Richmond, and I found myself listening out. It was a small class of 20 of us girls. And, you know, they were younger than me, and they were going out after class, and I was, like, chiming into that. I was like, ooh, damn, I'm jealous. You know, I can't go out. Why can't I go out, you know, in my head? And then eventually I did go out, and eventually I drank. And because that's what I do. That's what I've always done. That's who I hang with, and, you know. And eventually then I graduated from that school, magna cum laude. I don't know how, but I remember getting up, going up to get awards, and just feeling like about this big, because I don't know what I said to you last night when we were out. You know, here I am married, definitely not acting like I'm married, with a bunch of dental students, right? And, you know, just not proud of any of that behavior. And you know, not coming home, you know, like I'm supposed to. I had intentions to. I mean, like, I didn't plan to go out and not come home. Like, I truly planned to go out with these people and have a couple drinks after school, you know. And when the drinking first started again, you know, I convinced my husband that it was okay and that I'd just drink with him, you know. And I remember we went on a ski trip with some friends, and it was for like 3 nights or something. By the third night, you know, he's a deep sleeper, thank God, you know. He wouldn't wake up when I came home, so he had have no clue when I came home. And the ski trip, he'd go to bed because he was tired from skiing all day. And I was like, I'm just staying up a little longer. And before you know it, I mean, I was drinking with everybody, partying. We just named this club downstairs. And, I mean, we made up. I mean, it was on. And then I don't even know what time I went to bed. The next day we're on the ski slopes, and, you know, the people behind us that are staying in the house were like, oh my God, your wife's crazy, you know, like a trip, like fun. And I thought, oh my God, he's like, what did you do? I thought you came, we were coming to bed. I was like, I only had like 2 drinks, you know. And I was always lying again. And then eventually that caught up to me, you know. So I get back to AA for the final time in 2005, because my marriage is about to fall down the tubes. And he comes with me, which is amazing. We found a meeting, Jaywalkers, if you guys have heard of it. That was my first home group for three years, and it's a very strong meeting, thank God. And so my husband goes with me on Tuesday and Friday nights for months. I mean, he just went with me, you know. He probably didn't trust me, and he knew that I was struggling. I mean, I was crying. I was an emotional wreck. I would come to the meetings, and women there would just flock around me because they knew I was new. And that's what's awesome about a home group and meetings that you are committed to, because you know who's new, you know. It's like, and you can, if you're doing what you're supposed to do, reaching out to the newcomer and carrying the message, then you're going to reach out to those people. And that's what they did to me. And they just took me in. And I've been here ever since. And it's been a wonderful, different life for me, completely, from what I had, you know. I mean, life happens. I've had life, you know, happen. And I'm actually been separated for 15 months. We've been married 14 years. So new stuff's happening for me. I'm living alone. You know, I mean, I have my kids every other night. My soon-to-be ex-husband is amazing. We're friends. We didn't go to court. I mean, we didn't, because of AA, because of the principles, and because of the way that I am shown to live on a daily basis and guided, we don't have that. I mean, I just left the pool with he and my kids, and he comes over when he brings the kids and eats dinner with us, and vice versa. And my friends, not my friends in AA, because that's what we know here, that we can, you know, we cease fighting anyone or any, you know, anyone. And so, you know, but like work friends and different people are like, what? That's crazy, you know? That never happens. And I'm like, well, it's got to be God. It's got to be my higher power. And, you know, no one's struggling. The kids are doing well. My kids are 11 and 9. So it's unfortunate. And it's different. But it's been doable, and it's been good, as good as it could be. But anyhow, so sobriety for me. So I come in that Jay Walker's meeting, and, you know, I'm crying, I tell y'all, and I'm just feeling this big, and, you know, I'm a bad person and all this, you know, in my head. And but the women just took me in. They gave me their numbers. Thank God a lady in there got my number, because I was a little, I mean, I was shy until you put drinks in me. So I wasn't really going to call people I didn't know. But I did take some literature and stuff like that and read it. And I kept going back to that meeting. And what I loved about that meeting, well, I didn't love it at first, but what I love about it today is because I felt like I was on the spot. I mean, one of those nights, I think it was a Tuesday night, you had to go around the room and say, you know, my name is Melissa, I'm an alcoholic, which is what we always do. My sobriety date is blah, 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 and I have a sponsor, or I don't have a sponsor. Like, that was the thing for everyone to introduce themselves. And so, you know, I always wanted to be included, be a part of. I was like, oh, my God, what is this sponsor thing? Because, you know, I was like, not in the minority. Like, I didn't have a sponsor for a long time. I don't remember how long exactly, but I just know that I was one of few that were saying I didn't have a sponsor. And so I pick up pamphlets on sponsorship, take that home. You know, I had those women, one of them called me one night, which was great. And I didn't really realize how much I wanted or needed that. I remember I was in the bathroom, and my husband comes knocking on the door, and he's like, you know, someone from the meeting's on the phone. Her name's Andrea, and you guys might know her. But anyway, she's still in my life today. I actually text her. She lives close to me again, and I was going to see if she wanted to ride, but she had to work till 6:30. But anyway, she was the first woman to call me. And, I mean, I just started crying because I needed that. Like, and it was amazing. And all she did was call me and talk a bunch of crap and just be like, did you get a sponsor yet? I know this girl named Marcy. You should get her. And, you know, just small talk, talking with me. And I was like, oh, yeah, I know Marcy. And but Marcy said the F word. So I was like, you know what? I can't pick Marcy. I'm so used to those bad words. I was like, and she probably doesn't say it too much, but she did. And I was like, and I was so judgmental of people at the time. Here I was suffering. She's recovered, and I'm judging all of you in the beginning, right? So anyway, I ended up getting a sponsor, though. And she's still my sponsor today, same one. And she's been amazing. But, you know, I asked her to sponsor me only because, you know, I felt pressured a little bit because of that meeting. Like, I don't have a sponsor, so I get one. But she didn't just say yes. I remember she was like, well, meet me, you know, we'll meet for some coffee and we'll talk about sponsorship. And I was like, okay. So I had already read the pamphlet. So she meets with me and she's like, well, the way I sponsor women is, you know, we're going to meet once a week. We're going to pick a date that works with both of us, and that's our commitment. That's our time. You know, you don't cancel unless you're sick or out of town. You know, she's like, that's our time, and we're going to read through the first 160-some pages of the book and go through the steps together. Meanwhile, you know, I want you to go to at least 3 committed meetings a week and add more in if you can. And of the 3 committed ones, you're going to pick a home group, which there's a pamphlet on that, you know. So I didn't know what all these things were, but they're in all the pamphlets and stuff like that. So I read about these things, and because I had a lot of time on my hands, you know, I changed people, places, and things, you know, like was recommended. I had to. I wanted to. I mean, or, you know, I didn't want to go do those things anymore. Somehow God removed that, thank God, that obsession for all that stuff was removed. And I was desperate and in need for something different. And so I started meeting with her. I ended up getting the home group. I just joined that one, Jaywalkers, I told you about. And thank God, because they're a strong meeting. They're involved, you know. And that's what I've been told, you know, because I have moved since then and, you know, had to get other home group. And in picking a home group, I mean, that's what my sponsor said. Make sure they're involved in service within the home group, but as well as at the district level and stuff like that. And that's what you want to look for and this and that. And we had business meetings, which I'd sit in and be like, ugh, you know, in the beginning. Because they would go on forever, and they just bicker about I don't know what. And I was like, oh, my God, why is this so important? Who cares about the cookies? Just get chocolate cookies for the meeting, you know. But anyway, I didn't say any of that, but I'd be thinking about, I'm ready to go home, you know. Because they had the business meeting for like an hour after the meeting. But today I see the point of that, you know, and I started getting that and what that was. And then I became involved in a district level. Like I got, at first, my first jobs, you know, I got a service job because that was another thing she said. And, you know, when you pick a home group, do service for your home group. Well, once I picked the home group and came to the business meeting and stuff, you know, then they assigned me to a job. So I was a greeter, which was really cool. I loved that. I did that for like a year and, you know, could greet everyone. And this meeting is huge, too. So, you know, lots of people to greet at that door. And then I eventually, you know, saw who was new because I was a regular going there, you know. And it was a Friday night and a Tuesday night. And Friday nights, I can remember stuff would come up, like, you know, my cousin's graduation. Just different things would come up. And I'd tell my sponsor, and she's like, Melissa, something's Friday nights are popular. Something's always going to come up. But that's your home group, you know. So I always chose that most of the time, you know, over anything else. And, you know, I had jobs there. I had to make coffee eventually. I became the coffee maker. And I told you it's a huge meeting. So at that point I was pregnant. I had one of my first kids. And I had this big carrier with her in it that weighed like 50 pounds. And then I had to make all the coffee, like two huge pots, bigger than those back there, that had to be wheeled around, you know. So I had a key to the church, and I'm talking 100 people at the meeting, you know. And so that was really cool. And, you know, about service and home group, I think I've shared this here before. Some of you may have heard this, but a really touching story that happened for me was when my daughter, my first child, was like 6 months old. We thought she was having seizures. Make a long story short, we ended up in the in MCV for a week with her, and were told that she was most likely going to become 100% mentally impaired, this and that, you know, just, and I was like devastated. It's like, oh my God, you know, I had no control over it. Meanwhile, I'm in AA learning that I'm not in power of it. You know, I'm powerless over lots of everything, right? So this was God's way of showing me how powerless I really was, you know. And but I tell you, it happened on a Friday. We went to the hospital on a Friday, and the meeting night was that night, and I was the one with the key. And our meeting is so big that I did have an alternate coffee maker that I had to call. And because this had happened so fast, no one knew what was going on with my kid or anything except my immediate family, because it was just happening so fast. There was no reaching out to AA. I mean, it was just like, we have to do something, and we immediately got admitted to the hospital. But I knew that I had to make the coffee, so I was like, oh, shoot, you know. So I called the alternate. It was this man, and I was like, hey, Eric, I'm not going to be able to go make the coffee. Can you do it? And he's like, yeah, what's wrong? And so I just told him vaguely, we're in the hospital, you know, my baby, this and that. And, well, you know, I was about to have a nervous breakdown in there, because that was my baby, and oh my God, they had her hooked up to everything. I mean, she's going to be 100% mentally impaired. She was fine. What's wrong? You know, what's going on? It's just a lot of unknowns and fear. And what happened was all these people from AA, because Eric, from my home group, started showing up and calling me. And thank God, you know, just reminding me that, that, you know, that's God's child, you know, and whatever happens is in God's hands. You know, you don't have control over that. And, you know, just people showing up for me. And that was my first, you know, true spiritual experience in AA, you know. And later, as she got better and we got out of the hospital and we had to get this medication that was, like, not even approved by the FDA and had to start injecting her legs every day, getting the medication shipped to us from another country. I mean, it was just crazy and just unheard of. You know, you look up the stuff on the internet and whatever was going on was extremely rare. And so there wasn't a lot of research on it. And anyway, we're injecting her legs, and I remember going to the pharmacy one day, and there's this man from AA. You know, I'm a wreck, and there's this man. Just, you know, just God puts people in places, you know, like I needed that man in AA right there, you know, that day, because I was losing it, you know. But anyhow, and that's how it's worked for me. If I can step back and, you know, not run the show and, you know, just let go and know that things are going to be okay and just trust that and have hope. And that's what I get here. My higher power speaks through you guys. Like, I no longer have a punishing God like I had when I got here. I mean, I told you, I thought I was going to go to hell. You know, I had to smash those old ideas, you know, that was told by my sponsor. And you know, I met with her every week and we read through the book. You know, like I said, I had the home group, I had the job in there, and we, you know, we did the steps and we did the 4-step and I shared the 5th step with her. I just did another one with her because I told you I'm going through life, you know, and that needed to happen again. And how freeing that is. Like, you know, 2 weeks ago, I was a little bit of an emotional wreck, just, you know, for a little while. It doesn't go on too long these days because I know what to do. You know, I have a solution. I don't want to sit in that. You know, I don't want to be in that. I want to be okay. You know, I want to be happy, joyous, and free like I've been many a times here. So there's no way I would let this go, you know. But anyhow, so what else? So we go through the steps, you know, making amends was really freeing as well. Scary. I have a sponsee now who was over the other day reading me her amends list, and we were going through it about what, you know, which one she should make and this, that, and the other, just, you know, praying about it and stuff like that. And it took me back to mine, you know, and when I first did it, and just how nice it is to be able to look people in the eye today and be okay with myself, better than okay with myself, you know, feel good and not be that person, you know, running, you know, like crazy in people's lives, you know, destroying people's lives and things like that. I don't know what time it is. Anybody? Okay. So anyhow, what else, you know, you know, sobriety's been great. I've had the opportunities to sponsor women along the way, sponsoring some now. You know, like I said, got the same sponsor last night. So, you know, first of all, going out, you know, like my home group was huge. They're into social stuff. They're into, you know, hanging out. And I didn't know anything about hanging out sober. So I remember my first time going to a party with, you know, all my people in AA from my home group over someone's house. I felt so uncomfortable. And going to my first AA dance and different stuff like that, and, you know, and just not having the alcohol to make that. But, you know, I got over it. Like, it ended up being great, and I can remember what I said to you the next day, and I have learned how to be a true friend in here and how to actually pay attention to someone and give someone, you know, my 100% attention. Because I was so selfish before I got here and started doing some things and taking action that, I mean, I wouldn't even know what you said. You know, I wasn't giving you my attention, and I mean, I might have cared somewhere in there, but I was so worried about me and what was going on with me. And today, I still can be a little selfish, but I think we all can. But today, you know, God takes me out of self a lot because I still keep the same commitments. Like, I'm still going to my committed meetings. I still have a home group. And when I go to these things, I don't know what's going to happen there. I don't know who I'm going to meet. you know, so I might have a plan to do something, but it might change because then I meet some new lady and then she calls me and then next thing you know, I got to put time for her in my schedule and, you know, and then I'm sharing the message with her. Meanwhile, I'm feeling great because of that, you know, and so is she, like just helping others. Like I was the type of person too who used to like really, you know, have a plan for my life and my day and this is this and this and this and I worked off lists and checking them off and I got to do this and have this done and, you know, and I remember my sponsor pointing that out to me about, you know, what if that doesn't get done, you know, it's going to be okay. You know, you don't have to be right, you know, and I remember I see little things like at my kid's school and it'll say like on their library thing like, is it better to be right or kind, you know, and how do you know you're right, you know, and then like raising kids with my husband, like I was real rigid because, you know, I'd never been a mom and I thought it's my way, I got to do this, we got to do it this way and you got to do it this way too, and, you know, so there were struggles in that and, you know, but it's all been learning. And then, you know, and today when I get in any kind of pain or, you know, because it happens, it's going to happen, but I grow on the other side of it. Thank God if I can just stop and just, you know, take a little action, meditation, prayer. My prayer life and meditation life has changed dramatically in the last year. I, you know, it's been like this, you know, throughout the years of sobriety, but like my reliance upon my higher power is huge today in comparison to what it's ever been. And that's great, you know, because that's all I've got, truly. It's my higher power. And, you know, and today he's not punishing. And anyway, I know that as long as I continue to do what I've been doing here, you know, meaning same stuff, you know, it's the same stuff from the time I came in. It just, I have to pray for the willingness and take the action, you know, reaching out to others, helping others. And what does it say? When all else fails, you know, helping others, you know, I mean, that's what I do. And I talked to my sponsor, you know, since 2013 when that happened and, you know, that kind of sucked and I was embarrassed. I mean, I had to pick up another white chip after 10 years with some of sobriety. I was like, what? You know, I thought I was over that. You know, no. I thought no one is, right? And so, you know, that was so humbling for me. And another thing that happened with my sponsorship is that, you know, she and I, our relationship changed more over that too. Like now I don't call her after the fact of things. You know, I mean, I didn't really know how to use her too much before, but I mean, today, you know, we talk weekly. I'll share one more thing that was awesome. Last night, some of our friends, I know you know them, Jeremy and Anne-Marie, they were in AA when I got here. They were in the room. She was one of the hands reaching out to me. He was in my first home group. Anyway, they're moving to Scotland. And so they had a big party, AA party last night, AA band. And a lot of people in the band were in my first home group. And, you know, it was a great party. I mean, I was dancing, having a good time. I mean, everybody was, you know, no alcohol, you know, just a bunch of people being true and happy and joyous and free, you know, and the gifts we're given here are like nothing I've ever, you know, I've ever experienced before. And anyway, I hope I said something that helped you guys. I think I'm out of time, but thanks for letting me share. And again, sorry for being a little late. And that's all I got. Thanks.